The Ark of Millions of Years. New Discoveries and Light on the Creation. My name is Brooks Agnew. I'm the co-author of the book, and I'm going to read the chapter called The Cataclysm to you. The peaceful, bejeweled expanse of space has always fascinated man. Since the first sentient eyes peered up into the night, beyond the glow of firelight, the patterns of stars and galaxies, visible to the naked eye, have given birth to myths and gods and somehow connected the mind behind those eyes to the past. Only now do we even speculate on how distant that past might be. The light reflecting off the most powerful mirrors into modern image processors may be the story of sources billions of years old. Still, astronomers stare into oculars and review still shots of sectors in space, hoping beyond hope to find something out of place, something different enough so as to indicate movement. We have inherited the witness of every Circa's meticulous observer. The sun and nearly all the planets were carefully plotted and recorded by every dynasty, cave community, and scribe. Some observers recorded only 3 planets and a sun. Some recorded 4, 11 planets, 10 planets, and now only 9 planets recorded for all time in these many records. So it is now, so it was then. Or is the present a deceiving indicator of the past? One rule is the same for all times. 1 minute things are still and predictable, and the next minute, chaos. A planet revolves on its axis, and in its course is observed to rotate around another body in space, usually large enough to hold some governing force over the circumnavigating traveler. But this is not always the case. Planets can have long elliptical orbits. In our solar system, all the orbits of the planets lie practically in a single plane. Of course, this means if any one planet had anything but a relatively circular orbit, the result might be conflict on a global scale. We now have evidence of tens of millions of planets that float through space without any orbit at all. These free-floating planets inevitably collide with something. Sometimes that collision is no more eventful than a fly striking the windshield of a jumbo jet. Recently, we witnessed a shattered comet slamming into Jupiter at hundreds of thousands of miles an hour, generating hundreds of megatons in explosive power. The hole in Jupiter's atmosphere was visible for a few months, but the total event hardly left any impression on the planet due to its immense size. Even further evidence is emerging that planets of like size have collided, or nearly collided. Light speed has been theorized to be constant and the limiting velocity in the universe. Although this has been disproved and contradicted hundreds of times with subatomic particles accelerated to many times that speed, we shall capitulate and agree for now. Let's suppose a jet aircraft is low to the ground and moving at nearly the speed of sound from behind you. You would be completely unaware of the approaching craft until it was well past vertical and visible down the exhaust of its engine. 1 second, it wasn't there. The next, you've spilled your drink and ducked your head. So it is with planets moving through space, it seems. The Earth moves at a leisurely 18.5 miles per second around the sun. But free-floating planets may be slingshotted thousands of times that speed across the galaxy. Histories from every surviving observer the world over, recorded in their own languages and with their own frames of reference, an event that is irrefutably real and that nearly killed all life on the planet Earth. It first appeared as a distant glow. The first observers noticed it was not the normal whitish or bluish sparkle of a familiar planet or a star. This was a red glow, like the color of blood. Barely visible to the naked eye, its careening path, hardly a revolution like a whole planet, appeared to form a tail not unlike that of a comet as it approached the sun and boiled off some of the frozen sea chunks pulled along by its glowing head. Over a period of weeks, it drew the attention of every continent in its line of sight. Of course, it made no sound in the void of space. It seemed to stay in the same place in the sky, but it continued to grow in size and color. That's because it was on a collision course with the point of observation, the temporal Earth. The village's best night eyes must have climbed the nearest mountains to get the best view possible. Through their fear and surprise, they must have reported the terrible form and action of the body hurling through space toward their retinas. Within days, the great and terrible event was visible in the noonday sky. According to dozens of records kept by historians all over the world, the approaching body was not alone, nor was it an unfamiliar shape. As it rotated in space, ever-changing arrangement and perspective like picturesque clouds on a lazy afternoon breeze, it galloped forward like a red dragon or a serpent with a 50,000-mile tail. First, its fierce mouth would gape open wide after its prey. Then its menacing claws would lash outward, flickering with bright molten orange talons. Some recorded that as Earth's perspective changed, the crescent-shaped corona around the blazing head looked like a giant bull with red horns. The Chaldeans described it as a bright torch of heaven. The Mexicans called it a smoking star, or Tzontemoque. The Aztecs called it Quetzalcoatl, commonly known as the feathered serpent. The Egyptians called it Sebaj, or one with hair, as did the Babylonians. Some scientists say this was the precursor for Venus. One translation of the word Venus is hairy planet. Some say it was Marduk, the victorious planet that slammed into Tiamat and broke it into large pieces. As it traveled through our solar system, its gravity drew shattered remnants that trailed behind and eventually fell into our oceans and across our continents. But in the beginning ages of human record, authors writing on clay or gold or paper believed in heavenly purposes to the motions in space. The panic and chaos on Earth was only the beginning. The evidence of at least a near pass from another planet or a very large comet is clear. Physicists have calculated the mechanics of this planet-to-planet interaction. The Roche limit is the orbital distance at which a satellite with no tensile strength, that is to say a liquid satellite, will begin to be tidally torn apart by the body it is orbiting. In other words, as two bodies in space approach one another, the gravitational forces that hold the smaller or less dense body together begin to be overcome by the gravitational field of the more dense planet. Keep in mind that planets do not have a perfectly spherical gravitational field. Rotating planets have centrifugal gravity. They also have internal cores that rotate at different speeds than the crust. The result is a term called effective gravity. This often takes the shape of large lobes of gravity that protrude millions of miles into space. Whenever two planets are near one another, these lobes, called Roche lobes, may intersect at points known as Lagrange points. A fairly stable orbit may result. But when the Roche limit is encroached, the result is spectacular. Even the larger planet undergoes massive changes to its rotational speed and crustal features such as mountains and oceans. As the remnants of what could have been a shattered planet came close and applied its gravity, the Earth's crust heaved and moaned in agony. volcanoes erupted. Once peaceful and majestic mountain ranges split open and bled, destroying lava from their souls into the sea. Valleys vomited shards of granite and basalt high into the sky at all angles. Soon the seas, once governed with the regularity of eternity by the moon, began to reach out to the oncoming invader. Within days, the crust of the earth began to slow its daily rotation around the earth's core. When the crust stopped, half the earth was in darkness that lasted for at least 3 days, freezing and rumbling. The half facing the sun, or the approaching body, burned to the dirt. Like a cosmic generator, the solid, momentous core of the earth kept spinning, launching the magnetosphere 100,000 miles further into space. Its attraction to the twisted, careening core of the approaching maestro was focused 23.5 degrees askew of Earth's north pole. The magnetic flux lines pouring out of the top of the world aligned with the elliptical path of the passing serpent bull. The planet tilted in realignment. The new north, the current 23 degrees off center, would change the face and the life of the planet forever. Rocks formed along the fjords of the Scandinavian countries from molten lava before and after this event were frozen with different magnetic norths, indicating that the Earth had one direction for north before and a new direction for north after the cataclysm. The oceans stood thousands of feet into the sky, spilling as far as the laws of physics would allow toward their new and powerful attraction, leaving the rest of the world trembling and violated. Earth's poles shifted and waned for days, while the side of the earth toward the sun raged with fire and the leeward side blazed with ice storms. Flora and fauna perished by entire species. The life of the seas, once free to roam the globe, now thrashed in geotropic confusion. Muck, made of slurried animals, plants, and men, heretofore not thought to coexist on Earth, was jammed into cliff faces, crevices, caves, and fissures all over the planet. Their bones and fossilized cellulose have been exhumed and carefully dated. Even the omnivorous man was nearly swept from the face of the earth as the now tilted and wobbling earth began to restart its rotation. Due to the momentum of the dense planet core dragging the crust into motion, and the Roche intruder pulling at the tangent of its exit from the Earth's surface. As the planetary puppeteer moved closer, the electrical potential between planets was unleashed. Dozens of civilizations recorded these events in their writings, paintings, and legends. Giant bolts of lightning danced like flickering swords, splitting sky and space. Some looked like spears or swords. Some looked like whips or arrows. The length of each blast was immense. The thunder rumbled the ground so violently that everything fell down. Trees at ground zero were either snapped over like wheat before the storm, or they were vaporized in a flash of infrared fury. Each pulse of the electricity surged into the earth and turned thousands of tons of rocks and dirt into pure energy. Mountains of debris were launched into the stratosphere, catching the chaotic jet stream on a global path to blot out the sun. The resulting shade would last for 50 years or more. Blast after blast, each discharge took on a new sound. Witnesses record some sounding like long and terrible blasts from a cosmic trumpet. Others said they heard a voice, deep and foreboding, naming the deliverer of the cataclysm. Within a few days, the serpent's head would continue on its path, narrowly avoiding the limit of its own destruction. But the worst was yet to come. Its entourage of small debris, doubtless the frozen remnants of the shattered planet's sea and atmosphere, was caught up in Earth's gravitational pull. Striking the atmosphere at thousands of miles an hour, the smaller pieces exploded. Rains on a global scale fell in rivers onto the barren and scorched land. The larger pieces struck the earth hard enough to split the crust. The ocean floor ripped open halfway across the planet. Hundreds of smaller pieces, laden with billions of tons of iron, splattered across the equator, the Carolinas, the Atlantic, and across Europe into southern Siberia. The ocean floor was covered in 3 feet of iron pellets, frozen as they struck the ocean like white-hot hailstones. Forests were flattened, and lakes were created with each impact. At the same time, the deeper oceans began to recede from their dance in the sky. Tides as high as 6,000 feet traveled at speeds over 100 miles an hour, crashing around the planet, and slammed into one another on the other side. It took months for the level to equilibrate. The polar caps formed during decade-long ice storms under the blotted solar energy. The celestial visitor lumbered toward the edge of the solar system, prophesied to return again someday. A new planet appeared in the eastern sky, a morning star, now at the most circular orbit of any planet in the solar system. Venus stands bright and regular and peaceful to behold. But the Earth would never be the same. Once peaceful and ever tropical, planet Earth was forever to be turbulent and extreme with its newfound attitude toward the sun. The moon was pulled thousands of miles further into space. The rotation of the Earth, now slower, wobbled with an instability that would curse the crust with ever-shifting tectonic chaos. The oceans, now mixed with the sea life of a distant planet, battled for millennia to a new ecology. The atmosphere, once thick with ozone and billions of gallons of protective moisture, now condensed with a tiny dew point, would expose the planet to deadly cosmic radiation 50 years after the dirty sky was cleansed with gravity. Man survived. Many species did not. Caves and crevices all over the planet are still jammed with a frozen, mucky mixture, like a snapshot of bones and plants that early scientists incorrectly assumed never coexisted. Woolly rhinoceros, giant sharks, ancient rainforests, and modern humans all died on the same day, only 11,500 years ago. The Alps, once a line of lowlands, were pulled 10,000 feet up and 100 miles north of their original position. Errant boulders weighing hundreds of tons were blasted across millions of acres by thunder so loud it could be heard on the other side of the world. Interplanetary methane, discharged with millions of volts of electricity, formed long-chain hydrocarbons and rained upon the earth like pale milk. It was called hoarfrost by the Israelites. It was sweet to the taste and smelled like honey in the early hours of the morning. In the heat of the day, it melted. Forward scouts, sent by Moses, returned with reports of land flowing with milk and honey. But without stars and the sun to guide them, the Israelites only moved a few miles at a time. The sky was so low at times they had to lie on the ground to see any distance at all. Only a small fraction of these heavenly carbohydrates were consumed by animals. The vast majority seeped into the earth, forming huge underground lakes and geysers, which today are only barely tapped by drilling a few miles into the earth. For nearly a century, the earth has blossomed into unprecedented prosperity through the combustion of this raw form of energy, mistakenly called fossil fuel. In a very short time, cosmically speaking, the Earth was changed forever. Lifespans were shortened. New symbiotic relationships would be formed. The plant and animal kingdoms had new neighbors. The entire populations of some died. New ones emerged in their new world. The very course of the earth was changed. For 100 centuries, man would try to explain and remember these events. That we should never forget, they made songs and scriptures and legends. Whether random cosmic and catastrophic chance or the actions of a mighty and intelligent command of God Himself can only be determined by the Spirit. One choice leaves only the despair of the pagan heart. The other spawns the realization of a family inheritance of galactic proportions, provided one is obedient to that Creator. The choice belongs only to man. Choose now and carefully. An apocalypse similar to this may be found in the Old Testament. The writings of Moses record that the Red Sea split in two and was pulled up into two walls of water, leaving dry ground where the sea once rested, while the collapsed sky rested on the Egyptians and the ominous fire of the commanding light in the sky blazed into them. The Israelites were able to migrate across to the other side of the Red Sea. This may have taken 2 or 3 days, as what we now call a day, 24 hours for a complete circuit of the sun, may have been 72 hours or more. Hours, more likely it took days for the house of Judah to walk across a distance of nearly 29 kilometers, at its narrowest point and possibly as much as 90 miles after the Israelites were on the other side of the sea, the mists of darkness lifted from the Egyptians. Half emboldened from their wonder that they had not been hurt by this planetary assault and enraged by their hatred for the Israelites, the Old Testament records the Egyptians charged over the shallow shoals and across the bed of the sea. By the time the largest of these heavenly tormentors was moving away from earth, the waters of this shallow sea, now released from their gravitational maestro, crashed together like a mile-high tsunami and covered the entire Egyptian army. The migrating Israelites finally stopped at the base of Mount Sinai, some 80 additional kilometers from the Red Sea, crossing to the southeast. Is it any wonder that without the commanding leadership of Moses, the anxious Israelites fashioned a golden likeness of the very comet planet that delivered them from their dreaded enemy? Who's to say that these same forces, directed by a heavenly hand, did not work upon our planet in rather regular succession? In fact, recorded history seems to support this. Every 49 years, a week of 7 years, a similar, albeit smaller scale, event is recorded. What is this errant planet that wreaked so much havoc on historical observers? Why was there a custom of freeing all slaves and forgiving all debts every 49 years, called the Year of Jubilee? Some scientists say it was Saturn. Some say it was Venus. In fact, the name Venus, as I said, means hairy planet. The peoples of the Middle East were so anxious about this periodic conflagration because of the history of earthquakes, storms, floods, interplanetary lightning, and regional fires that seem to fall out of the sky and devour stone, as well as volcanoes and collapsed sky conditions. Life in many forms was threatened every 49 years with heavenly disaster. From one jubilee to another, the leaders did not want to have their society unable to flee to freedom, or perhaps more importantly, they did not want to appear before God in debt to man or the holder of a slave. Then, perhaps as suddenly as it started, the visiting cosmic judgment ended. We can easily see Venus brightly and calmly shining in the northern hemisphere like a silver jewel harmlessly guiding sailors across the sea. There is no recent physics that predicts another such calamity. Of course, every major telescope on or off the planet is contracted nearly every minute of the day and night to look for something other than near-Earth objects, also called NEOs. It usually takes a very long succession of nightly overexposed space photography of exactly the same coordinates to notice anything moving in space. Rarely do such explorers have the freedom to just look around and see what may be nearby. The rest could be that just such a cataclysm may occur again. The result could be a new cataclysm. Who could tell? And if you think about it, who would tell if they knew? What could possibly be gained by telling? That's right. You figured it out. Sure makes one think twice about passing up a great deal on a telescope, doesn't it?